Welcome to episode 327 of the Selling Your Screenplay podcast. I'm Ashley Scott Myers, screenwriter and blogger over at sellingyourscreenplay.com. Today, I am interviewing actor, producer, director, and also writer David Wall. He just did a new film called Gold Dust. We talked through this film and how he got it produced. It's another great example of a guy getting out there, making things happen for himself. So stay tuned for that interview. The SYS six-figure screenplay contest is now open for submissions. Just go to www.sellingyourscreenplay.com/contest. The early bird discount runs through May 31st. The idea for this contest was simple. Find the best low-budget scripts and present them to the industry. I'm defining low-budget as less than $1 million U.S. dollars. In other words, six figures or less. If you have any questions about how to figure out the budget of your screenplay, I created a video which you can find on the landing page, which will hopefully help you estimate the budget of your screenplay. Here is how the contest is going to work. Every submission will get read by at least three professional readers. These are readers I've hired to read through the scripts in the first round. Each reader will give each script a quick assessment, which you can actually purchase if you'd like to see some quick feedback on your script. The scripts that stand out from the first round will move into the second round, where I will disseminate the scripts to our panel of industry judges. And then the industry judges will grade the scripts again. I'll, of course, look through everything and we will decide on our winners. We're giving away thousands in cash and prizes to the winners. I've lined up about 40 industry pros as judges. These are producers. These are other writers. These are directors, actors even. They're listed on the contest page with links to their IMDb pages so you can actually see and get to know who these people are. Many of the judges are people who have been on this podcast. These are real filmmakers who are making movies. And the reason many of these filmmakers are willing to be judges is because they're hoping to find material that they themselves can produce. Once again, if this sounds like something that you would like to learn more about or perhaps enter, just go to sellingyourscreenplay.com/contest. Again, that's sellingyourscreenplay.com/contest. If you find this episode valuable, please help me out by giving me a review in iTunes or leaving a comment on YouTube or retweeting the podcast on Twitter or liking or sharing it on Facebook. These social media shares really do help spread word about the podcast, so they're very much appreciated. Any websites or links that I mention in the podcast can be found on my blog in the show notes. I also publish a transcript with every episode in case you'd rather read the show or look at something later on. You can find all the podcast show notes at www.sellingyourscreenplay.com/podcast. And then just look for episode number 327. If you want my free guide, How to Sell a Screenplay in 5 Weeks, you can pick that up by going to sellingyourscreenplay.com/guide. It's completely free. You just put in your email address and I'll send you a new lesson once per week for 5 weeks, along with a bunch of bonus lessons. I teach the whole process of how to sell your screenplay in that guide. I'll teach you how to write a professional logline and query letter and how to find agents, managers, and producers who are looking for material. Really is everything you need to know to sell your screenplay. Just go to sellingyourscreenplay.com/guide. Quick few words about what I am working on. Hopefully everyone is staying safe with COVID-19. The lockdown is still very much in play as I'm recording this podcast episode. I'm working on my mystery thriller film, The Rideshare Killer, which we shot in December. The editor is putting together a rough cut. So far, I've seen about 30 minutes of this first rough cut. You know, it's just rough, but it's coming together nicely. I'm really happy about how everything is looking. Tony is the other producer. We are making notes as he is sending some of these sections. So far, he's sent three 10-minute sections. You know, we view them, we're starting to make notes on them, and we'll start passing notes back and forth, just working like that remotely until COVID passes. Most of the post-production stuff can be done remotely, so it's not always ideal. There are definitely some moments where I would rather be in the room with the editor, you know, telling him my notes as opposed to just emailing them. But it basically works. But there will probably be some moments, hopefully in another month or 6 weeks, about the time where he's got his sort of first version of the rough cut and taken a couple passes with our email notes. We're kind of hoping that COVID will have kind of passed a little bit so we can kind of get in a room with him. And maybe those last two passes of the film, you know, maybe two or three passes, quick final passes, will be in person. Most of the post-production stuff can be done remotely. I mean, a lot of it is done remotely anyways. The guy that creates, you know, the composer that creates the score, you know, he just sits in his apartment, his house, his studio, and he's just, you know, watching the film, composing the music. And obviously there's back and forth and stuff. Obviously, eventually you do want to get in a room with all of these people, your sound design, color grader, you know, there's just always little tweaks. You want to be in the room and just talking. Sometimes you just have to try little things. And so it's not always that easy to send an email, have him adjust things, send an email back. You know, sometimes if you're just in the room with somebody, you can get through stuff a little bit quicker. So it's not ideal, but overall, I don't think COVID is really going to set us back that much, which is great, you know, just in terms of getting the film done. So I think we're still kind of on pace to get this film done, you know, 6 to 9 months. But certainly, let's say by the end of 2020, we should be done or very, very close to being done. At least that's the goal. And as I said, even with COVID going, I think we'll probably be able to hit that goal. Anyway, so that's the main thing I am working on, just pushing that film through. So now let's get into the main segment today. I am interviewing actor, producer, director, and writer David Wall. Here is the interview.
Welcome, David, to the Selling Your Screenplay podcast. I really appreciate you coming on the show with me today.
I appreciate you having me.
So to start out, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up and how did you get interested in the entertainment business?
Sure. I grew up in the Mojave Desert, California. I became an actor back in the 80s, came to LA and started getting work as an actor. And at some point, I just by a fluke, I took a trip to Europe and it was a terrible trip. My wife and I took a trip to visit my brother who was trying to be a writer in Paris. Huh. And it was a nightmare of a trip. We went from Paris, we went to Ireland, and it was just anything that went wrong, that could go wrong, went wrong. When I got back home, I wrote a letter to my brother about the trip and he said, "Okay, I quit. You should be the writer, not me, and you should submit this." And I submitted it and the Washington Post bought it and I was shocked, completely shocked.
And what did you actually write, though? You wrote just like this letter to him detailing how bad the trip was, and it was just comical, and so he thought...
Exactly. And the Post published it as the best story of the worst vacation. Huh. And I thought, well, I'm going to write screenplays, because that's what I knew. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a screenplay and then tried to get a director to direct it. And of course, nobody's going to direct it, you know, without any money. And so I thought, well, I'll direct it. Mm-hmm. And that was my first film called Joe and Joe, which got into Sundance. And then you just try to make the next one. The mm-hmm. next one I made was called Noel. People can watch that on Amazon right now. It's doing real well on Amazon. And then this is the third one. This is the third one I've made.
So. So just the long and the short of it, how did you get Joe and Joe together? And then Noel, on IMDb, it's listed as Miss Worthington's Party, correct? Noel is?
Yes. I think it's also listed as Noel. It was originally titled Mrs. Worthington's Party. Gotcha. When Paramount picked it up, they named it Noel.
Okay. Yeah. So just sort of in a nutshell, how did you get the money and just to get those into production? You had your script. You have working as an actor, so you had some contacts. Again, what was sort of that process of going from having a script to actually having a finished film?
Great question. You know, you write the script and then I wrote the script based on what I thought I had at my disposal, because I knew that writing a script with aliens and clashes between worlds, I'm not going to get the money to do it. So I thought, what do I have? I was on Cape Cod at the time. I thought I have a house on Cape Cod. You know, I had a friend a couple friends in L.A. that were actors that were willing to be in it. And I began raising money and raised about $35,000. And this is literally with just family and friends. Mm-hmm. And that's what I had. And so I shaped the script around that. And then the shooting, you do also have to shape around the story, which is the script, which is what actually can I get that will tell this story? Not, I want to get all these shots. No, what actually gets this story told? I think we shot it in 14 days. So anyhow, that's your money runs out basically at that point.
Yeah, for sure. And was it similar for Miss Worthington's Party? That was family and friends, or were you able to get some, you know, equity or venture capitalist?
Family and friends. Okay. Family and friends. It was a bigger budget. It was on Cape Cod once again. But using what I had, the houses, the locations, the you know, people that owned hotels that would put up crews. I mean, you're parlaying all mm-hmm. those relationships into. So you're I think at the end of that time, your budget's probably much higher in terms of what you actually got. But And on paper, it looks pretty low.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so let's dig into to Gold Dust, your latest feature. Maybe to start out, you can just give us a quick pitch or a log line. What is that film all about?
You know, it's about a couple old prospectors that live out in the Mojave Desert that have been looking their whole lives for the ship of the desert, the lost ship of the desert, which is an actual myth. Some people say they've seen it, and then they can't find it again. It's nobody knows what's in it, but it's untold wealth. And these guys have spent their lives in the desert looking for that and every other mythical treasure of the Southwest over the years. Mm-hmm. They stumble across a very strange, what appears to be a drug deal gone bad, where a drug dealer is using kids, like kidnapped kids, to fly ultralights deep into the desert to do the exchange. They stumble across this, find a ton of money, and their lives are going to change radically. What are they going to do? They're running for their lives. People are after them now. Are they going to rescue these kids? And so it turns into an adventure. Comedic adventure.
Yeah,
adventure.
I got you. So where did this idea come from? What was the genesis or kernel for this?
Well, I live out in the Mojave Desert. And when you're out there, I go out there. I have an old four-wheel drive, and I'll drive out there with my kids. And they shoot a lot of little films, and we'd go out there to shoot stuff. And, you know, when you're out there, you find old mines, and you think, what's in here? What were these guys looking for? You find old shacks, you find, you know, graves, you find your imagination just comes alive, and you start thinking, some of these stories are probably true. Mm-hmm. There's probably treasure out here. And I think that's how. Plus, you know, the other thing is, you do think about, with the drug war going on the last decade or so, you do see little planes fly over, and you think, I wonder what that guy's doing way out here, you know, stuff like mm-hmm. that. And so I just sort of combined the two.
I gotcha. So let's talk about your writing process. We can be specific with Gold Dust, but even just sort of general, you know, generally speaking. So how much time do you spend doing the outline, index cards, sort of preparing? And then how much time do you spend actually in final draft, actually writing script pages?
I don't really do index cards. I always kind of start with a kernel of an idea before I even write anything. I'll go, something visual that creates that kernel. It may be a concept, but I start with a kernel, and then what I usually do is just, you know, yellow pages, just sort of writing ideas, mm-hmm. which I guess is a form of index card, which is saying, you know what, this is, I look at it as a path through the woods. I want to get from here to there, and I want to keep a straight line. And so I kind of think, I'll many times get the kernel, then I'll get the ending, and I think, okay, how do we get there? And I'll write a few notes, and I kind of jump into final draft pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. I jump in and start working, and it usually takes me a couple weeks to a month to finish it. And then you start honing it. And many times you'll have to chop stuff out because you just think, if I do this myself, I'll never be able to do that. Mm-hmm. So I got to adjust that. And a lot of time that's a blessing, because you have ideas that may be too convoluted or maybe too complicated. And necessity definitely is the mother of invention. Yeah. You think, I can't do that. Let's do this, and it works.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the development process. So you've written the script, you have that first draft. What does your development process look like? Do you have, it sounds like you have a network of actors. Do you also have a network of writers or producers? Do you send the script? Do you get notes back? And then how do you interpret those notes? Maybe walk us through that process a little bit.
Yeah, it's not a huge network. My network is people that I actually think can help me make the movie. I'm not just sending it out, you know, shotgun blast. Mm-hmm. Hey, tell me what you think. Because inevitably, you're going to get pretty discouraged, as you guys know. I mean, mm-hmm. everybody's a critic. Everybody's going to tell you what's wrong, and then you're going to say, hang on, have you ever made a movie? No. Yeah. But when I do, and you're like, okay, let's go to the next. Let's go to somebody that actually knows how this works. And so I use a small group of people that I think, hey, you know what? This guy can help me produce it. This guy can help me get actors. This guy can help me get the equipment. What do you guys think of this? Logistically, does this work? Story-wise, does this work? Do the characters work? Where's my weak spots? Mm-hmm. Tell me, you know? And a lot of times they'll come up with stuff. You know, this is a little bit of a diversion, but I hope it's helpful. For On Joe and Joe, I was trying to figure out a technique. We had no money, and I wrote in a, these two characters come to the door in disguises. And one of the actors said, I'm not, you're not putting disguises into this. That's so stupid. I can't believe you would even think of that. And I thought, well, wait, no. And he goes, no, we're not doing disguises. And so what I ended up doing was writing into the script a sort of a paranoia that one of the actors had about wearing disguises. And it, it was like one of the best scenes in the movie. And so that's an example of using what people tell you to adjust the story, if that answers your question.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So one of the things you mentioned is you were giving your pitch. Obviously, this is a sort of a comedic take, but it sounds very No Country for Old Men. There's definitely some of these types of films. Obviously, No Country for Old Men is, is all drama, not comedy. But how did you approach it? Just sort of the genre requirements, looking at some of the other films that were in a similar sort of subgenre. How did you approach the genre requirements? How did you approach this material? What other films did you look like, and how did you just prepare? I mean, you want to do, there's always that saying, the same but different. You know, you've got kind of a premise, but how did you want to subvert some of the tropes? How did you want to play into some of the tropes?
Yeah, you know, I guess overall, I wanted to create something that had a child's heart, that had anything's possible, you know, go out into the wilderness and let your imagination go crazy. And in that sense, it's a wacky film. Anything can happen. It's silly. It has this childlike heart to it. However, I wanted to dress up that childlike heart in the looks from like Once Upon a Time in the West, from Mad Max, from Raising Arizona, and with a little bit of Lawrence of Arabia thrown in. You know, in many ways, when we were out there, we were trying to make a film. We're trying to survive rather than just make a film, because you're deep in the Mojave Desert. You know, so I would tell everybody, this is almost like, you know, Breaking Bad meets Lord of the Rings out here. You know, it's we're mixing genres, and in that regard, some people are going to get it, some people aren't. So far with kids, we've had kids just love it. And I love that. And I love that, you know, there's so few films for kids where it's like an adult can sit with them and go, and I mean kids 8 to 16 or whatever, where an adult can sit there and go, hey, this is pretty fun, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. I'm curious, too, just as you're describing shooting out in the Mojave Desert and stuff, maybe you can talk a little bit about that. What kind of crew did you have? What are some of the things about the desert? Do you need permits out there? You know, do you need a ranger to be with you? You got to pay him. Well, how does it actually work shooting out in the desert and getting people out there, getting food out there, you know, hotels? What does that all look like?
Great question. And that was the challenge of this film. A, we shot deep in the Mojave, so kind of near Joshua Tree, not totally near, but in that area. And yes, you're supposed to have a permit, Bureau of Land Management. I tried to do this the right way. I went to them. I never got a response. I went back. I had no response. And I just said, guys, we're going to shoot until we get shut down. We never saw a single soul the whole time we were out there, which is almost a month. Secondly,
were you on public land though?
Yes.
Wow.
We were. I mean, you're on the areas that all the four wheelers, all the off roaders, the people that take their trailers and go camp in the. We were in a different time of year, but normally they're out there right now. We were in October. So, and the second thing, you make a really good point. One of the things that I had to succeed at in order to make this was find a place to put a crew. Because you can't drive every day that far. So I actually found a ranch that was willing to rent us space and was willing to let us put trailers out there. And so that was huge, because that brought us within about an hour's journey of all the locations. Secondly, you know, you're out there. I went out there for probably 3 months scouting locations. And I know the area well, but I went out there and really learned it. And, you know, you find amazing things. You find caves you just can't believe. You find ravines that are just I found a sort of a secret dry lake bed that I'd never found before that really play into the vibe of the script. But then you have to figure out a way to get a crew to these locations, and some of them you cannot. So you have, if you find a cave that's amazing and you can't get to it, well, then you need to find a cave that's amazing, that's less amazing, that you can get to. So there's a matter of constantly compromising, right? Mm-hmm. And otherwise, you're not going to get a film.
Yes.
So that's something that we had to do on a daily basis.
Yeah, yeah, perfect. Okay, so you have the script. What was your next step once you had the script as far as getting financing? Did you send it to some producers? Was it back to your friends and family to raise money? What was that process like?
Yeah, I went to my partner, Rich Cook, who's with Oculi Entertainment. He had been responsible for the distribution of my previous film. And I said, hey, you know, he's made a lot bigger films. He had just finished a film with some big names. And I said, I know this is probably far below you, but would you take a look at it? Because I'm thinking about just shooting on weekends with my kids, unless we can get somebody to put up some money. Rich was instrumental in bringing about, you know, we had a very small budget, but bringing about the money it takes from going from a home movie to a real film, you know. And he was huge that way. And he was really the one guy I went to a couple guys, but he was the one guy I went to that said, hey, I love this story and I think we can do it. You know, there was something that I think is key. When you go to a lot of guys that have made big movies, they can't think in terms of, for example, do you have to have a ranger there in every shot? Boom, up goes the budget. Do you have to have a first aid guy there, a stunt coordinator, whatever, all the things we think of as a film? Yeah, you probably do, but you're not going to get it made for the budget you have if you do that. So in many ways, there's a guerrilla aspect to this. And my job is to make it look as little like a guerrilla as possible, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. So then what was your next step with this film? Okay, so you shot it, you got it in the can, and then how did you ultimately find a distributor? Did you do the film festival route? What did that process look like?
You know, we didn't. I did festivals with both my first two films that won awards and whatever. With this, we tried to go straight to a distributor, and it took longer than we thought until we finally found a company called House of Film, which is our sales agent internationally, and they actually brought us to High Octane. So that's how we found them.
I got you. What do you think, in just, again, in general terms, what do you think about the festival route? You've done it with the other two films. Do you think it helped? I mean, it sounds like ultimately your second film sort of secured this relationship, which ultimately helped you get the money for Gold Dust. Would you recommend the festivals? I mean, there's always some debate. When I talk to distributors, they always kind of are down on the festivals. They don't feel like it really helps their job selling the film. So it really becomes, obviously the big festivals are different, but just sort of those mid-tier festivals, are they really going to help you? And what do you feel about that as someone who's actually been through the process with a couple of films?
I feel like the festivals were, this is just my opinion, I could be totally wrong, but I've talked to a couple of guys that have independent film theaters across the country, and which are becoming less and less, by the way.
Yeah.
And they have said, and I believe, that festivals have changed radically. Back when I got into Sundance, which was like 20 years ago, it was amazing, and it was a true mecca for independent film. Hollywood, in my opinion, has sort of dressed up as independent film and takes small films to these festivals and takes up all the spots. It's what it looks like to me. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Like with my second film, festivals were great. What I was told with this one from some of the cinema owners was, it's changed. You're probably not going to get into a festival. They're massive money makers. Everyone has a festival, and I don't know. My opinion might have changed, or maybe just because we didn't get into some huge festival. Mm-hmm. But I do believe it has changed a little bit in the last decade or so.
Well, how much do you feel, and I always ask, you know, everybody on the outside always thinks, oh, if I can just get into Sundance, my life will change. How do you feel like, you know, going to Sundance, do you think it was all that it was hyped up to be? Because I ask filmmakers, and to be honest with you, most of the filmmakers are like, yeah, it was a great experience, but it's not quite the rocket fuel that most people expect to their careers.
It's not. It's a super heady experience. It's an amazing experience. It's super rewarding as a filmmaker to mm-hmm. have a big audience see your film and respond well to your film, without a doubt. But it's also, and you think to yourself, wow, that's it. I'm off to the races. I'm off to the moon. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily how it works. It does every now and then, and that's what we all strive after, mm-hmm. right? But it didn't for us. I mean, yes, they put us on the Sundance Channel. It went on PBS. Carmike Cinemas picked it up. You, you meet a lot of people who say they're going to watch your work, big, big names who say, okay, we're going to study your work. And you want to say, hey, I'm ready to keep working, you know, study it now, you know, don't wait for my next film. So it is frustrating. I'm super glad I got to go. I'm honored I got to go. But it is, you're right. It's not exactly what you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to put that down. I think we should all try to go. It's just, you know, you're not going to have a 3-picture deal necessarily after that.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to be.
Yeah, hopefully
you
do. Yeah. So how can people see Gold Dust? What's the release schedule going to be like in the next couple weeks?
Well, I'm probably not the best person to ask on this. As far as I know, it drops April 7th on Amazon, iTunes, Vudu, Xbox, On Demand. You know, at probably as many streaming platforms as most people are, you know, are convenient for them.
Yeah.
But that's about all I know in terms of that. Apologies.
Okay. Yeah, no problem at all. What's the best way for people to keep up with what you're doing? Twitter, Facebook, a blog, anything you're comfortable sharing, I will round up for the show notes.
I don't really have anything, I'm embarrassed to say.
No worries. I'm not big on social media too, but it's the thing to do. So I round up these things for the people that do.
No, I appreciate it. But you know what? This movie, in a way, was made as an antithesis, especially with what we're going through right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a chance to disconnect, unplug, go to a different world because it looks like a different world, and just imagine and have fun in your brain for just 90 minutes or whatever, and then plug back in afterwards. So in a way, this is sort of a medicine to what we're all going through. Not medicine, but you know what I mean. A little vacation from social media.
Yeah, for sure. So, well, I really appreciate your coming on and talking with me today. This is a great interview, and I'll drop you a line when it goes live.
Awesome, man. Thanks for taking the time.
Hey, thank you. We'll talk to you later.
All right, take care.
Bye.
A quick plug for the SYS Screenwriting Analysis Service. It's a really economical way to get a high-quality professional evaluation on your screenplay. When you buy our 3-pack, you get evaluations at just $67 per script for feature films and just $55 for teleplays. All the readers have professional experience reading for studios, production companies, contests, and agencies. You can read a short bio on each reader on our website, and you can pick the reader who you think is the best fit for your script. Turnaround time is usually just a few days, but rarely more than a week. The readers will evaluate your script on 6 key factors: concept, character, structure, marketability, tone, and overall craft, which includes formatting, spelling, and grammar. Every script will get a grade of pass, consider, or recommend, which should help you roughly understand where your script might rank if you were to submit it to a production company or agency. We can provide an analysis on features or television scripts. We also do proofreading without any analysis. We will also look at a treatment or outline and give you the same analysis on it. So if you're looking to vet some of your project ideas, this is a great way to do it. We will also write your logline and synopsis for you. You can add this logline and synopsis writing service to an analysis, or you can simply purchase this service as a standalone product. As a bonus, if your screenplay gets a recommend or a consider from one of our readers, you get to list the screenplay in the SYS Select database, which is a database for producers to find screenplays and a big part of our SYS Select program. Producers are in the database searching for material on a daily basis, so it's another great way to get your material in front of them. As a further bonus, if your script gets a recommend from one of our readers, your screenplay will get included in our monthly Best Of newsletter. Each month, we send out a newsletter that highlights the best screenplays that have come through our script analysis service. This is a monthly newsletter that goes out to our list of over 400 producers who are actively looking for material. So again, this is another great way to get your material out there. So if you want a professional evaluation of your screenplay at a very reasonable price, check out www.sellingyourscreenplay.com/consultants. Again, that's sellingyourscreenplay.com/consultants. On the next episode of the podcast, I'm going to be interviewing Nyasa Hardiman, who just did a cool film called Sea Fever. It's a limited location thriller, takes place on a boat out at sea. We talk through her career, how she got started, and then ultimately how this film all came together. So keep an eye out for that episode next week. Anyway, that's our show. Thank you for listening.